After a dry, scorching summer, we've all been enjoying a beautiful fall. The temperatures have been mild, the colors vibrant, but there's one thing that's still missing. Rain. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're going to do a harvest roundup. We'll get an overview of the harvest across the state with Dan Piller, agriculture and energy reporter for the Des Moines Register. State climatologist Harry Hilliker will help us understand just how dry the state is and what that may mean for the future. Randy Tongis is a farmer near Monticello. He'll take a break from harvesting soybeans to let us know how it's going. I'll also talk with Jeff Blowett of Farmers Electric Co-op in Dune and Andy Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farms. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're in the final weeks of corn and soybean harvest in Iowa. The growing season for produce farmers is also at an end unless they have high tunnels to help them extend the season. And this hour, we're going to get an overview of the harvest across the state. I'll talk with state climatologist Harry Hilliker. I'll talk with farmers in Monticello and Grinnell. And Jeff Blowett of Farmers Electric Co-op in Dune, Iowa, which is way up in the northwestern part of the state. But my first guest today is Dan Piller, who's been following the harvest as agriculture and energy reporter for the Des Moines Register. Hello, Dan.
How are you?
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, you're very welcome.
And in July and August, there were a lot of predictions of doom and gloom with more than half of the corn and soybeans harvested at this point. The news doesn't seem to be quite as bad as we thought it would be back in July.
Well, no, it doesn't. In fact, just Friday, a private forecasting firm, Informa Economics, came out with a new corn prediction saying that nationally the crop would top 11 billion bushels. The USDA had said it would be 10.7 billion. Some of the earlier forecasts had it as low as down around 10 billion. Now, that's down from 12 billion last year, so it still will be down, but it's not quite the catastrophe that we thought.
Well, and let's talk about corn in particular. We'll start there. With the corn crop coming in, I know that we also talk about the quality of the corn crop. How is it looking?
Well, in some ways, it's even a little bit better because the last few years you've had a problem with too much moisture. Corn number two yellow has to be 15%. That's what the processors and ethanol plants want. Corn was coming in a year or two ago at 25, 28%. So the farmers have to spend a lot of money drying it. In fact, I remember 2 years ago, we actually had a propane shortage here in Iowa because the grain dryers were humming so much. You drive around small towns, you can hear them going like that. Well, this year, of course, the corn has been drier. So farmers haven't had to spend as much money drying their corn. So, but there has been a problem with low test weight. Sometimes it just hasn't filled out enough. It comes in that it's underweight. The kernels are smaller. So actually, that detracts from your yield a bit.
What's our average bushel per acre yield?
Well, we don't have an average yet for the state. The USDA now, it said it would be 140 bushels per acre. They're going to come out with a new forecast Thursday, and everybody's waiting for that. Informa said it would be 141 bushels. But in the summer, some of the predictions were as low as 120 or 117 bushels an acre for Iowa. Well, that's that was a really steep drop because Iowa usually averages around 170, 175 bushels per acre. So if we're up around 140, then that means we're at least looking better than we thought we were in July and early August.
When I was reading about the predictions in July, one of the things that really struck me is that when we were trying to compare this drought to the drought of 1988, that the lowest predicted yields, which were, you know, 110, 120, were the highest possible yields back in 1988. Just a moment to really compare. How things have progressed over
that
the years.
That was like, and you can almost say like 1988 was almost like the Old Testament. I mean, that was before biotech corn. The average yield in Iowa then was about 115, and in 1988, the yield came in at 84 bushels per acre. So, you know, you were looking at about a 30 bushel per acre drop, which may be about what we'll get this year, but The big difference is in 1988, we had a reserve of 4 billion bushels in storage that year, so it didn't affect the price very much. Well, this year, our reserve is less than a billion bushels, so we've seen record high corn prices all summer. We've seen $7.50. In fact, corn opened at $7.47 this morning. Well, that's double what it sold 2.5 years ago. 1988, the highest corn got that year was like $2.60. So we're dealing with much bigger numbers now.
Well, and the entire industry has changed so dramatically in the last 20 years or so. Is the reason that we don't have that much of a reserve, is it because we haven't had, we have had pretty good yields in years leading up to now? Is it just because there's a whole lot more demand for corn with ethanol and other needs?
Yeah. There's a lot more demand. Up to 40% of the crop now goes for ethanol. Actually, 60% of Iowa's crop, because we have 40 ethanol plants in the state. Exports are up, especially to Asia. You know, those countries are buying corn. The United States is still the preferred a supplier of corn of choice because we have the best transportation system. If you buy our corn, we can get it to the ports within a couple of days and have it in your port within a week. Other countries can't do that. And especially in Asia, their people there have decided, I always say the Chinese have gotten tired of eating Chinese food, I guess. And so they want more beef and pork and chicken, more proteins. Well, you need corn and soybeans to feed that. So that's where our market has grown.
When we talk about the price for corn, $7.47, how does that affect farmers who have lower corn yields this year? It sounds like they still might come out okay.
Well, I just did some rough calculations. Of course, farmers don't like this when you do it because it makes it sound like they're getting filthy rich and they're not. But in 2011, for the first time in history, the total cash yield for corn and soybeans in Iowa topped $20 billion. That's billion with a B. Just to give you an idea, that's 3.5 times the size of the entire state government budget, you know, just give you an idea of the relative thing. Well, this year, I calculated at the yields that we know about now. Of course, we don't have the final totals.
Right.
But with these prices, it'll still come to about $19 billion. So we'll only lose about $1 billion in cash from the whole thing. So it doesn't appear, and of course, it's early, but it doesn't appear like this is going to be a giant economic calamity for Iowa.
I'm sure there are some farmers, though, that really are getting very little out of their fields. There are some areas in the state that were harder hit than others. Are there places where you're getting a lot of reports of farmers who just aren't getting much at all?
Well, I talked to one farmer down in southern Iowa in Seymour. I was at the elevator down there, and he said he only got 20 bushels per acre. Of course, he was going to go see his insurance adjuster in
right.
a hurry. You have to remember, 90% of the crop here in Iowa is insured. And so we're going to see some indemnities here, but most people are of the impression that the crop insurance, and we've got insurance on almost 13 million acres of corn. That's almost the entire. That's over 90% of the crop. So, and those prices can be set at harvest time for a lot of the insurance. So I don't envision huge losses. It just means you'll have to file insurance claims and all of that. But the insurance should take care of most of the losses that the farmers are going to feel this year.
Let's talk a little bit about soybeans. We had some rain in a lot of parts of the state in mid to late August and early September that seemed to come at a pretty good time for soybeans.
Yeah, the thing that helped the soybeans was that August proved to be not nearly as hot as July, if you remember. And the soybeans set their pods in August. And so although the heat hit the corn pollination hard, the soybeans kind of escaped that. And again, the latest estimates for soybeans now are up to 41, 42 bushels per acre. That's still down from 50 bushels last year, but it's not as bad as what we were hearing back in July and August.
And how are soybean prices adjusting?
Soybean prices are high. Now, they've been off a little bit. They got up to $17 a bushel. That was a record or more. They're down to $15.61. per bushel. Now, that's mostly because the farmers in Brazil are going to start planting, well, this week and next. And Brazil's getting pretty good rainfall this year. Now, Brazil, one reason soybean prices are high is because Brazil had a drought in the spring, because they have two crops down there in the southern hemisphere. Their second crop was hit hard by the drought. But the weather forecast for Brazil has been pretty good so far this year, and the Brazilians are expecting a big crop. So there will be a good supply of soybeans coming out of Brazil. But at the same time, China, which is our biggest buyer of soybeans, is still active in the market. They were buying like crazy last week.
Well, and thinking way back to spring, of course, we've had high corn prices for a number of years, and it seems like we've been hearing about more and more acres being put into corn every year. Is the corn crop the thing that we need to focus on right now?
Well, actually, people have been talking all summer about soybeans being the sleeper crop, because soybeans, last year, soybeans averaged about $12 a bushel. Right now, we're at $15.61. So you've got a better problem. And I noticed that originally the USDA said there'd be 14.4 million acres planted in Iowa for corn. That would have been a record. But then later in the summer, they adjusted that downward to about 13.9 million. So quite a few. There are probably about 300 million acres in Iowa, or excuse me, 300,000 acres in Iowa were transferred from corn to soybeans, because farmers could see that the yield, or at least the cash yield, was probably better on them.
As farmers are looking to next year, we're going to talk with Harry Hilliker in just a moment. So we will talk about where we are moisture-wise and what that means possibly for next year. But as you talk to farmers around the state, how are they feeling about next year?
Well, about next year, they're worried about whether or not we'll get the rain in the fall. And Harry will address more of that. Harry and I have had several conversations about that.
I'm sure.
But it's worrisome, because as the farmers always say, you want to have a full tank. Iowa soils are almost 100% moisture deficient, and the drought, of course, has been well covered. Once again, we'll go into next year. I think the feeling is, hey, we kind of escaped disaster this year, mainly because what rain we got seemed to do okay. The question is, can we do it 2 years in a row? It looks like we might be faced with that, but Harry can address that more.
All right. Dan, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Dan Piller is the agriculture and energy reporter for the Des Moines Register. We're going to spend the rest of the hour traveling around the state, talking to farmers in different places around the state to find out how things look on their land. In just a moment, I'll be joined by state climatologist Harry Hilliker. We'll talk about the weather, how much rain we need to get this fall, and what's going to happen if we don't get that rain this fall. We'd love to hear from you as well. Send us an email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let us know how things look in your neck of the woods. Again, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Again, we're doing a harvest roundup this hour. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we are doing a harvest roundup today. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to start traveling around the state and talking to farmers around the state about their crop and what's been going on their land. But first, state climatologist Harry Hilliker is here with us. Hello, Harry.
Hi, good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being back on the show. And recently, looking at drought maps, it looks like things actually look a little worse for Iowa.
Yeah, it's been getting that way over the last several weeks. Once again, things kind of stabilized briefly during August, when we started getting rain a little bit more frequently across the state. And that continued a little bit into September, but the last 3.5 weeks or so, it's been mighty dry once again in the state. And things, not rapidly going downhill at this late point in the season, but still river levels declining very slightly as the dryness continues, and soil moisture levels just kind of holding steady, which is not very good at this point.
And how moisture deficient are we?
Well, the latest numbers from the Iowa Ag Statistics Office still showing, you know, very dry conditions across the state for soil moisture, with only 7% of the top soil moisture rated adequate in the state as of that was as of last Sunday, a week ago Sunday, that is. And certainly that number had gotten even a little smaller yet since then. And just 4% of the subsoil moisture conditions in the state considered to be adequate as well. So very, very dry conditions. Those numbers actually slightly better than they were, say, a month or two ago, but really not much better. And they should improve at least somewhat over the coming you know, several weeks. Evaporation now across states down to almost nothing, with the crops now mature and vegetation, natural vegetation kind of shutting down for the season. So any rain we get will result in that subsoil moisture improving, but we certainly need to be getting that rain much more frequently than we have thus far.
And this is really a critical period for rain right now through really the beginning of December, right?
Yes, it certainly is, and you go basically about 2 months to go before the ground's typically frozen, which that usually would happen during the first or second week of December, that the ground would be frozen and stay that way for much of the rest of the winter season. And so once the ground's frozen, hard to get much moisture back into it at that point. And plus, we're moving into the driest part of the year as well at that time. So between now and early December, certainly a very important time for us to get moisture recharged in the soil. Got another opportunity next spring before, you know, the growing season really gets going, say the latter half of March and then April as well. So there's still time. Certainly, I think we'd rather do that this fall rather than next spring, but got to get moving on that as far as getting more rainfall into the state.
Well, and for those of us who don't think in percentages, how much rain would we need to get this fall to get close to normal?
Well, as far as normal soil moisture, Iowa soils, and on average, maybe to hold 10 to 12 inches of water, the uppermost 5 feet of soil, and what we call plant available soil moisture. And right now, probably much of the state's less than an inch of moisture that actually there. And so we need, you know, roughly about 9 inches, 9 or 10 inches additional soil moisture. And with evaporation rates, you know, down to, you know, next to nothing at this point, 9 or 10 inches of rain would be enough to get that needed soil moisture. Unfortunately, October would only average about 2.5 inches of rainfall. November around 2 inches, maybe get a half inch that first week or two of December. So we're looking altogether maybe 5 inches on an average mid to late fall season.
And of course,
rainfall.
We've been significantly below average thus far this year.
Yeah, we certainly have been. And yeah, just the last, say, 2.5, 3 weeks now, we've had a state average only 1/4 inch. And we should be getting maybe 2.5 inches over that time period. So so probably, you know, if we just assume normal rainfall the rest this year, that'd be about 5 inches of precipitation, or a little more than half what we need. And so then we'd be looking towards next spring, latter half of March, might get, you know, maybe inch and a half of rain at that point on average. And April, say about 3 to 3.5 inches. So putting all that together, that would get us pretty close to field capacity, say by end of April next year, with just normal rainfall, you know, not really anything excessive. But, you know, it seems easy to do, but so far we've been having a difficult time doing that.
Right. Well, and looking at the 10-day forecast, there's not a whole lot of rain in the forecast.
Yeah, there is actually a pretty good chance coming Friday night, Saturday time frame, this coming weekend. Although it doesn't look to be a real big event, but we might get maybe half inch, perhaps, average over the state, which would be better than we've seen in a while. But, yeah, we certainly need to get in a more productive weather pattern than what we've been in.
How critical is snowfall?
Snowfall, generally, not big of a deal for us. And I guess for a couple of reasons, actually maybe three reasons I can think of right offhand. I guess just to start with, our midwinter season is our driest time of the year by far in Iowa. We only average actually a little less than an inch of rain or inch of liquid equivalent during January and February each month. And that compares to, say, 4 to 5 inches over the summer months. And snowfall itself, on average, would account for about 10% of our annual moisture in Iowa, so it's not a very big contributor. And what makes it even less important, I guess, in the soil moisture sense, is most of that snow is falling on frozen ground and either evaporates or runs off into the rivers before it really has much chance to help with our soil moisture levels. So snow, really not a big factor, although as dry as things are, we'll take whatever we can get.
Sure. And looking ahead to the next growing season, when you look back at droughts in the past, is there a drought hangover effect into the next growing season often?
Yeah, there is, at least to some degree. It's not a huge correlation there between what happens the year following a drought, like we've had this year in 2012. But certainly, majority of the time, though, we would have less than normal precipitation for the year following a major drought like we've had this year. And another factor, I guess, as well, is there's still drought in place over a very large part of the lower 48 states. And so just by everyone's facing, much less than usual subsoil moisture, and that lower soil moisture means lower humidity levels and such, which just makes it that much harder to get a decent precipitation event going. Not just here, but anywhere around us. So we not only need to recover, but a lot of the rest of the country does as well. So it's probably going to be a relatively slow process to get things turned around as far as, you might say, the national weather pattern that just about everyone's unusually dry at the moment.
When we look at weather patterns around the world and the Southern Oscillation Index and all the other indicators that we can look at, what do you think we have a chance for happening in the next 6 to 8 months?
Well, I guess the only thing we got kind of going for us in a big way right now is just the time of the year that, summer heat's past us now. And so all the countries, should see some improvement in soil moisture levels. Just a question of how much. And the one thing we're hoping for, it might be El Nino event developing. We've kind of been on the El Nino side of neutral for several months now, but just hasn't really gotten going. And officially, it's not an El Nino event yet. And some of the forecast models, really don't show it, strengthening very much. And El Nino would be a very good thing for us.
They do tend to bring rain.
Yeah, it tends to bring rain every season in Iowa except for the midwinter. And say midwinter is a dry season anyway, so that's not a huge worry there. But certainly could use normal to better than normal rainfall, which El Nino usually does bring us. So we might still eke it out and get an El Nino event really ramped up. But so far it's been a very slow development, and just things don't look real favorable for that coming our way. So I guess at the moment, what we're looking for is, really any place in the middle part of the country to get some rainfall. Recently, there has been some decent rains across at least parts of Texas and Oklahoma and points south of us. And also just to our southeast, across Illinois, southern Illinois, Indiana, a place like that. And basically any rain we get somewhere in the vicinity of Iowa, at least be somewhat helpful as far as getting higher humidity levels, maybe slightly increasing the odds of getting some rainfall ourselves down the road.
All right, Harry, thank you so much.
Yep, you're welcome.
State climatologist Harry Hilliker. And now we're going to start moving around the state to talk with different farmers. Randy Tongis is on the line now. He's a farmer near Monticello. Hello, Randy.
Good morning.
Hi, and you're harvesting soybeans today?
Yes, we're finishing up soybeans for a neighbor today, and all of our soybeans are done. So we're looking forward to getting these wrapped up. It's always a nice time of year when we can finish those and put them away and feel like you've accomplished something.
Oh, definitely. And how many acres of land do you farm?
We farm about 1,400 in Jones County.
And how does that break down corn and soybean-wise for you?
We actually were pretty heavily corn this year. We did some flipping on our normal rotation. Normally, we're probably 75% corn, and this year we're up to about 90% corn this year.
Oh, wow. And how has your corn harvest turned out?
We've just got a good start in it. We're pleasantly pleased, I guess, with it. Yields are probably 30 bushel better than I expected from what we went through this summer, but they're highly variable. They're all over the board. At our home farm, halfway between Anamosa and Monticello, they're just average. South of us, about 5 miles, we've got a farm that looks like it's absolutely perfect stand and could be normal yields in that 200 bushel range. We did one farm that was in that 140 bushel range that, for the conditions we had this summer, I was very happy with. So test weight seems to be a little on the heavy side, 58, 59 pound test weight. The kernels are nice and deep, so they put on a little, that September finish was very good for us here.
And does that mean you'll have to go through some drying?
Yes. It's actually the opposite of what you would normally expect. Usually the drier portions of the field are drier, but this year they're the opposite. So it almost like the corn was stunted when it was stressed and it stalled out, and so that corn is a little later maturing. We jumped into one farm that we thought was pretty heavily damaged with the drought, and we found that moisture is still running up into the 25%. And so that was kind of a shocker, and we only took one load out of that farm and scooted out of there and found a different one. But nothing is normal.
There's no way to know what you're going to find out there. So how's your soybean yield, Ben?
Soybean yields are in the mid to high 50s, and so we're very pleased with those. They soybeans are a tough one to judge. They looked like they were going to do 30 to 40 all season with the stress on them, but so we're very happy.
Right. Well, we were just talking about a few minutes ago, there was kind of a really critical rainfall for soybeans in August and September, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We got a nice shower that came through here, and actually we're only about a 10-mile radius of our farms, and 5 miles north of the home farm, we've got probably an inch less than we accumulated all summer, and then 5 miles south, we probably got 3 inches more, and that made all the difference in the world of finishing these crops out.
Well, it sounds like you're going to be in pretty good shape when all is said and done. Are you feeling good about things?
Oh, yeah. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We're definitely going to get clipped off the top end. We're probably 20 to 30% below our expected yields, but we always have high hopes when we start, and sometimes a little reality has to set in. But I'm very happy with what I would have estimated 60 days ago.
Well, absolutely. I'm sure you had some sleepless nights this summer with the extreme dry conditions.
Yeah, you just didn't know what to expect. It looked so gloomy around here and so it's always nice to get it picked up and put away now. So
what does that feel like in the middle of the summer when you've really done most of the hard labor as far as planting goes? You can't start harvesting yet. There are not as many hands-on things that you can do in the field. What does it feel like when you're just hoping for rain?
Well, your anxiety level is elevated for one thing, and you just, even though, you know, you trust Mother Nature to come through, sometimes she can be rather fickle, and so you've tried to take all your risk away that you can and do everything that's in your power, and then you're really at the mercy of Mother Nature. So you trust and you pray that everything is going to be okay, and it might not be the fondest year that you've had, but yet it'll be just fine. So onward and upward from here. So
how long have you been farming?
We've been farming 35 years.
All right. So you went through the drought of 1988.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And that was much worse here. I think the weather patterns were very, very similar. But on our corn on corn in 1988, we had a hard time getting 60 to 70 bushel to acre. And that was a stretch. I mean, it was hard to meet cash flow. And we were just getting started farming and all the usual, you know, things about trying to get established and that. It was a nail biter.
Were you using any drought resistant corn or soybeans this year?
No, we try to be very careful where we place our hybrids, and so if some of them has a better score in that area than others, we will try to adjust and like I said, reduce our risk where we can. But in all honesty, the best hybrids are usually the best hybrids are usually the best hybrids. So if we place them on our best soils, we usually think that we've done all we can to maximize our efforts.
So you had a very corn-heavy year this year. Does that mean you'll have a soybeans-intensive year next year on much of your land?
I love to grow corn. I mean, that's just corn is my passion, and I enjoy. I will probably increase the beans, but we won't go over 50% on soybeans next year. But we it just seems like it's a better fit for us.
So you're not rotating all of your fields?
No, we've got a couple farms that's been continuous corn for 25 years.
Okay. And as you're planning for next year, obviously an eye on the weather forecast, but what do you need to take into effect at this point, just briefly?
Well, we need to be careful not to expose the soil to any additional drying. We are bone dry here now. This last month has been just moisture deficit altogether and basically little or none. For accumulated rainfall, and it's a little spooky now going into fall, but yet I'm comfortable that we will get some fall rains to recharge. But we're going to be very careful about our tillage practices, and we're not going to try and lay this soil open and expose it to anything that would reduce the soil holding water holding capacity any more than we have to.
Randy Tonjes, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and we're doing a harvest roundup today. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, I'll talk with Andy Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farms. But right now, we're going to go way up into northwestern Iowa. Jeff Blowett is at Farmers Elevator Co-op in Doane. Hello, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes.
And so
good to be here.
You're at a Farmers Elevator Co-op. You must have seen a lot of farmers coming and going in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, we get to see a lot of geography up here. We get to see a lot of different things going on, and yeah, we get a kind of get a pulse of the area.
And how do things seem? Let's talk about corn first. How do things seem in the corn?
Well, I guess I've been doing this for 20 years, and it's probably the most varied year I've seen. Some of the area and everything around the state obviously was nip and tuck with moisture, and every tiny little bit of moisture you got made a difference. And it seems like we're looking at Lyon and Sioux County, so we're way up in the northwest corner as far as you can go, and then a little bit into South Dakota and a little bit into Minnesota. But in general, it seems like the further south in our area, the less rain we had. I mean, we had some silage chopping going on in July because there was basically no ears, no grain, just to get rid of it before it completely burned up. So essentially in our area, some of the better soils to the north, you get up along the Minnesota border, were pretty good. We had anywhere from 0 to 200 bushel field averages. So we had the full gamut of variability here.
And within farms, do you see that kind of variability? A farmer with one field that's turning out well and another field that's not so great?
Yeah, we're in an area here, some of the territory has some quite varied soils, and you might have a yield monitor go from 0 to 240 in the same field, just some flat, heavy ground along the bottom versus some light hillsides. I mean, that's probably an extreme example, but there actually is some of that stuff here. Water holding capacity was the key. Your heavier soils, I mean, soil type maps were real easy to do. If you'd fly in a plane and look at the fields in late summer, you could see every little bit of difference in the soil structure here.
In northwest Iowa, if I'm not mistaken, the drought seemed to start a little bit earlier up there, didn't it?
Well, we had some rain in April. We had pretty decent rains here in May. Some parts of the area had anywhere from 5 to probably 10 inches of rain in May. We had, very little going into the spring in our subsoil. So we got a pretty decent start, really. And then once we got into, we were really, the whole area had less than an inch the whole month of June. Basically, the whole area had less than an inch the whole month of July. Probably somewhere around 2 inches the whole month of August, and then nothing in September. So that's kind of the general moisture pattern. So we did have some moisture this spring to get going, and then it dried out.
As I mentioned earlier in the hour, the predictions of doom and gloom in July and August were pretty dire, and it seems that there's almost a general feeling of relief that things didn't turn out as badly as they could have turned out. What's the general sense with the farmers that you interact with?
That would definitely be the case. I mean, you know, we talk about these fields that have virtually no corn on. That wasn't really a surprise. Some of this along some of these real light soils, I mean, that's not uncommon for them to really struggle. Obviously, it was worse, and those areas were bigger this year. But in the general speaking, the better ground, the average to better soils were surprising how well they yielded as opposed to what guys' expectations were. Probably, oh, I would say 30 to 40 bushel better than we expected on the corn. I think we kind of joke around here, if you'd have went around, just stopped in every farmyard at the end of July and offered to buy everybody's corn for 150 bushel an acre on the good ground, everybody would have sold you every acre and you'd have probably been rich today.
And how are soybeans looking?
Kind of the same deal. We get up unbelievable yields in northern Lyon County. The better soils planted early on, you know, on time, you might say. We actually had some field averages of 70. In general, we're in an area where we have our soils allow us to raise really good soybeans here. We're probably more fortunate than a big chunk of the state. And that's not a terrible high yield. I mean, we've had better, but generally it's really right up there, way above what we expected on the soybeans. I don't think anybody saw 70 bushels coming because we're like the rest of the discussion's been. That stuff was rolling up and wilting about every day for periods of time this summer, and you're just hoping to get 40, and the good ground was anywhere from 55 to 70 up here.
Great. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your time today.
You bet.
Jeff Blowett of Farmers Elevator Co-op in Doane, Iowa, way up in the northwestern part of the state. And now we're going to go back to central Iowa. Andy Dunham is a farmer in Grinnell. He is the owner and operator of Grinnell Heritage Farms, which is an organic vegetable, herb, and flower farm. Hello, Andy.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you for being here with us today. And we've been talking about a lot of corn and soybeans this hour. Life is very different on an organic vegetable farm. You have a lot of different crops in different fields throughout the summer. Can you give me sort of a thumbnail of how the summer went for you?
We have about 300 some odd distinct planting events from, let's say, late February until about now. And so anything that was direct seeded in the ground after like the mid-May or so, our last major rain event was on May 11th. And so everything that was direct seeded in the ground after that, we struggled with. Early planted crops did pretty well, and things that were transplanted with water did pretty well. So
what were the early crops that did well?
Like our early carrots and beets, and we got our potatoes in really early because it was so warm. And then all of the transplanted crops we put out with water, so they seemed to do pretty well. The mid-season stuff after May 11th that we struggled with would be late carrots, late beets, some of our fall seeded roots like rutabaga, things like that.
And did you have any crops that seemed to do particularly well this year?
Yeah, we had a really good sweet potato crop. Sweet potatoes are tropical in origin, from Papua New Guinea. And so they liked the heat, and we had the irrigation. So we harvested about 20 to 25,000 pounds of sweet potatoes.
Wow.
Off of a little less than half an acre.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was a good yield.
Earlier in the hour, we were talking about one farmer who really didn't get any rain at all this summer, and he was off to see his insurance adjuster. Crop insurance does not work the same for an organic vegetable farm as it does for a traditional corn and soybean farm. Are you able to get any crop insurance?
In the state of Iowa currently, the only option you have is called NAP, which is through FSA as well, and that's non-insurable agricultural products. That policy, because we don't have vegetable data in Iowa, basically sends back a yield that is so ridiculously low that it's not worth buying it. So we don't buy a crop insurance policy. Then we're also not eligible for disaster relief then. But we'll make it through because I think you heard me talk at the harvest dinner in Iowa City. We'll make it through because of our diversity. Being certified organic certainly helps. We have really high organic matter in our soil, so we had yield where you wouldn't expect it on a lower organic matter soil. And then we have a lot of supportive people that really come out and support us financially. So,
well, you are a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, so that means that people buy shares in what you produce, right?
Yep.
And so they've bought shares in what you produce. What happens if you don't have produce to deliver?
We haven't run into that problem this year. The diversity is one of the keys. Plants way more than you think you might need. And some things will yield really well when others don't. So our sweet potato crop has been fantastic. And so our CSA shareholders are probably trying to find inventive ways to use sweet potatoes as they get, 5 or 6 pounds a week here. With 40 or 50 different crops in each box, we only need to maybe pull anywhere between 10 and 12 different things in a given week. So the mix might not be exactly what we intended. But we've had what I've considered for this year pretty good boxes.
You mentioned having a higher percentage of organic matter in your soil. Why does that make a difference when we're talking about moisture?
Yeah, I think you interviewed Tina Diffley a couple of weeks ago, and she gave you the exact figure. For every percent increase in soil organic matter, I think you can hold, I can't remember if she said 16,000 pounds or gallons of water per acre. So don't quote me on that, but it really increases moisture retention, having higher organic matter. And through cover cropping, using compost and manures, our soil organic matter on much of the vegetable garden is topping 5 and 6%, whereas in a lot of corn and soybean fields, you might be down around, anywhere between 1 and 3. So.
You mentioned, basically you were flying without a net because you're not eligible for disaster relief and the crop insurance that's available to you isn't adequate for what you actually do at Grinnell Heritage Farms. So we have the community-supported agriculture, so you have that kind of investment. But did you see significant losses compared to the year before when we come to talking about a farmer's market? Proceeds, that kind of thing.
Yeah, we're getting to the size where we don't do as much business through farmers markets as we used to. So where we really saw our losses was in wholesale. So if you have a contract for zucchini and you don't have zucchini, you can't send them cucumbers instead. So on a number of different wholesale crops, we'll see quite a loss. With vegetables, though, it's like many other crops that you can grow. The bulk of your investment is in harvest and post-harvest handling. So if you know that the crop isn't going to make it, we tend to either till that in and plant a cover crop. And so we've lost the potential sale, but we haven't necessarily lost that much money because we didn't harvest it. But we definitely are going to be in the six figures short on income this year. So.
And what does that mean for you going into next year?
It'll be a little bit more of a struggle than what we had intended. Like our fall carrot crop usually provides us cash flow through the winter. We send a lot of our carrots to New Pioneer Food Co-op in Coralville and Iowa City. And there are some in the field. We're going to hopefully get some out of the ground. So I know our loyal New Pie customers, don't fret yet. We'll see how it goes in the next month. But our cash flow will be a little bit tighter. So I think we're going to probably put out a call to CSA shareholders, to hopefully have them pay in advance, a little more in advance of the season. Rather than going to a bank, our CSA shareholders the last 3 years have really given us the cash flow through the winter months in order to get started in the spring. So we haven't had to borrow money, and I don't think we'll have to this year again either.
So you really lean on your community when there's a problem, as opposed to leaning on the financial system.
Yes.
What does that mean for you as a farmer? How does that give you any kind of added flexibility?
The CSA, having CSA shares really gives us flexibility because if you lose the zucchini crop for wholesale, you can't really substitute something else. With the CSA shareholders, you still want the zucchini, in order to give them adequate supply an adequate supply of zucchini, but you can substitute something else, and most people don't get too upset about that. So it gives us an awful lot of flexibility, especially, having different places to sell things and different models. The CSA wholesale and farmers market model in combination seems to work pretty well to give you the flexibility to get through a difficult year.
In the organic farming community in Iowa, I'm sure you talk to a lot of other farmers. It sounds like you have worked yourself over the years into a pretty strong position where you have a lot of strong community support. You have loyal shareholders and relationships with businesses so you can sell your products wholesale. When you talk to other organic farmers in the state, have there been some that have been really hard hit this year?
Yeah, I think in Grinnell we've been a little luckier than some of our farmer friends in other parts of the state. We didn't really get that much rain, but it seemed like we got, you know, maybe a half inch or a quarter inch when plants really were droopy. It seemed like we'd kind of get that half inch or quarter inch, and some other folks didn't necessarily get that. But as far as community goes, I think there are a number of farmers who have forged these kinds of ties with people in the community. I know, like, I'm thinking of Blue Gate Farm. Jill and Sean have done a great job of having that sense of community. Rob and Tammy Fox at Genuine Fox Farm have a great community around them. The list goes on and on. So there are a lot of supportive people throughout the state that really make this possible without having that insurance as a backdrop.
Just to go back to the fact that there really isn't an insurance program for organic farmers in the state, is there an area within agricultural policy in Iowa that is really nascent, that needs to grow to cover organic farmers, or at least understand what you're doing?
When it comes to I can speak more to the vegetable side of that than commodities. Organic commodity, like if you're growing organic corn and soybeans, you can get insurance, but you have to pay, amazingly enough, you have to pay a penalty. So you actually pay more for your insurance than you do if you're not organic. And the vegetable side of it, I'm kind of torn. I don't know if I really have a great answer for that. I'm not sure that I want the federal government to step in there. I'm thinking through diversity and forging that sense of community. I'm hoping that we can kind of do some, it's almost like being self-insured. But, you know, I think my thoughts on this should evolve as we go through maybe a little more difficult growing. I'm not really sure how I stand on that yet.
Well, it just strikes me as very interesting because although there is a strong movement for locally produced fruits and vegetables in Iowa, in the Midwest, and really around the United States, this is not an entirely new thing. It surprises me that policy toward agriculture seems to be lacking in this area.
It is quite difficult. We've worked with our local FSA office, and they've been, while I don't particularly care for the NAP policy, the folks at the local FSA office have bent over backwards, really, to kind of accommodate our system, because we do certify our crops with FSA. And when I say we have 300 distinct planting events throughout the season, that means that we have in our field somewhere around 400 different fields. So they spend more time certifying our crops than the largest corn and soybean operator in Poweshiek County. So, you know, they're trying. There's so much variability in how people do vegetable crops, though, compared to corn and soybeans. Like with corn and soy, you know, the number of systems that you can employ are probably fewer in number than you could with a vegetable system. So yields and vegetables tend to be a little more variable. You know, farming practices, whether or not you're organic and getting good weed control, that really does affect how your yield comes out. So I can understand why it's difficult. I'm hopeful that we maybe can get some sort of a safety net in place, but I'm not even entirely certain that we need the kind of insurance that corn and soybeans have.
Andy, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks for having me, Charity.
Enjoy your sweet potatoes, and I hope next season is a little bit easier. Andy Dunham of Grinnell Heritage Farms. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Production assistance today from Allison Sullivan with technical support from John Pemble. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa.